Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of La Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Hugh Hardy, joined as always by Derek Brissett. Derek, we came to round 18 of Major League Rugby. The season has been and gone, well, the regular season at least. And, you know, one of the things I really appreciate this year is that the final three rounds have just been all the teams playing instead of, you know, a team having like a bye week right at the end to really throw a spanner in the works. And, you know, next season with the introduction of Miami, we're back to odd teams. So unless another team suddenly appears in this offseason ready to play like Chicago was last year, it looks like it's going to be another season in which a team gets to sit out the final round. But having six games a weekend for three consecutive weekends of professional rugby in North America, I mean, even just a few years ago, that was something you couldn't really fathom. And now here we are. We will get on to the Arrows game in a second, but there was definitely a lot of action going on. You know, we had, even if the playoff picture had already been decided, were there any things that really stood out?
It wasn't completely decided. You still needed the New York Old Glory playoff seeding was still left to be figured out.
Yeah, but I think that was it. Was basically get a bonus point and you're secured. Actually, I wasn't even sure of that because
there was one bonus point. They needed one after Old Glory won. New York needed one bonus point.
Yeah, and then it was like win advantage.
Yeah, and then Shabazz got the try. And then New York basically, well, I don't want to say they gave up, but then all their subs came on. And it was just, they got the job. They lost by a significant margin, but they did what they needed to do. It was the score of that game. Oh, yeah, 43-33. So not exactly that they did what they had to do, I guess, but it is what it is.
Yeah, fair enough. Right. Let's get into the Arrows game, the final one of the season. And, you know, Against, that's one way of putting it. We'll get into the dissection of the season as a whole later. But let's talk about this game first. You know, up against Nola Gold, the old enemy, the first opposition the Arrows ever faced in MLR. And, you know, it started off pretty well, you know, scoring first, which is an oddity of the season. And
back-to-back game scoring for no...
They did not score first
against San Diego.
I'm going backwards
on that. All right.
You're going back a season on that, mate.
I already have to edit this podcast. Dang.
All right. So, first try, Mitch Richardson scoring it and Shane O'Leary getting the conversion. Then it looked like Fabian Goodall had scored a second try, but now I was in the stands. I was with the crowd at this time, so I didn't hear the reason why it didn't get counted.
Well, in rugby, one of the more unusual rules is that you're not allowed to throw the ball forward, and that's what they called.
Yeah, but it seemed a very odd situation because after the try was disallowed, it then went back to a penalty. So it was like, well, okay, if they had the advantage, why? But okay, then again, if it's
because you're not allowed to throw the ball forward.
Yeah, but
this isn't hockey. You don't get to do something extra just because there's, I guess, that hockey, it's a penalty kill. You can ice the puck on a penalty kill. But yeah, just because you have advantage in rugby doesn't mean you can pass the ball forward. It was slightly forward. It wasn't forward by a lot. But
yeah, I think that was the issue because a lot of us, especially near pitch side, couldn't see it going forward. Like a certain Nola cancelled try later in the game. But then it went back, and so it was decided to go for a penalty, and Shane O'Leary started that. So it's 10-0 advantage, and then the game gets pretty even at that point. Now, the Arrows did get two more penalty opportunities, and Shane O'Leary lined those up both times, going slightly right at the post. And then, so at the 40-minute mark, the Arrows were leading 10-0. And by halftime, the Arrows were leading 10-7 because Noel are able to get the first try of their game under the, well, I'll say under the, more like next to the post because I'm pretty sure there was a conversion for that one. And then what happened in the second half is something a bit more familiar with the Arrows games this season, which is The opposition score first, and then they score again, and then they score again. By which point it is coming up to 26 unanswered points to the Arrows 10. We're into the final 10 minutes of the match. And now, to be fair, the Arrows did keep fighting, keep going, and eventually James O'Neill did get the ball down over the line to make it a more respectable 26-17. But, you know, it's basically you need to score multiple times within, what, 5 minutes to get that win back. Just when it looked like the Arrows had possession, they conceded a penalty. Nola goes for a line out. It goes to one side of the field. It comes the way back, and a long pass gets intercepted by Liam Bowman, who runs 90 meters, scores under the posts for a 7-pointer to be the final score of the game, the final act of the game, as the clock's already in the red. The final score, Arrows 24, Nola 26. Derek, what did you like about this game? What did you...
You know, I got real nervous with about like 10 minutes left of the game when the power went out. And I was just like, the lights are out. This is a
this is the apt metaphor.
Yeah, the metaphor, the omen for this season. Obviously, with this loss, they finish with a 113-2 record, which I got to confirm with James, but I'm pretty confident that's the first time an MLR team has ever finished the season with more draws than wins. Which, I mean, again, as we keep saying on this podcast, record-setting season for the Toronto Arrows.
Yeah.
Depends on if you want to view those records as good or not. This game. I know you really want to get into like the full like autopsy or eulogy of the 2023 Toronto Arrows season. And in all honesty, I think this game is a good like segue into that conversation anyways, because I think a lot of what happened in this game is a lot of the stuff that's been plaguing the Toronto Arrows all year, but also like some of the things that they've done good all year showed up in this game. And then obviously a lot of the bad. So it was a game that kind of illustrated, you know, what, like the whole season, really, in a weird way. You have, before the game even starts, there's lineup changes and stuff like the, you know, injury situation that started off really bad and never really got better. The names on the injured list may be changed, but the quantity of players on that list rarely did, right? So, obviously that's something that, you know, was obviously an evolving situation, a part of the storyline for this season. Tassi was initially on the injured list and then ended up being in the starting lineup. So that's, you know, so that's something, but it's like, so that's kind of how the game starts. And then, you know, we have, if you go back and listen to like our post-match interviews, Lucas Rumble dropped the Jekyll and Hyde line, I think after... I'm not sure if it was after the...
I think it was the New England game.
Yeah, after the New England game. Yeah, right. And, you know, this game kind of illustrates exactly what I think he meant by that. First half Toronto Arrows, completely different than the second half Toronto Arrows, right? In this game, we saw both Jekyll and Hyde. There's the other elements of it. Like the first half of the team, of the game, was really good. The Arrows controlled territory, they controlled possession, right? But part of that too was they controlled all the territory, all the possession. They dictated the pace of play. They did everything that they probably wanted to do. But there's a couple situations where points are left off the board, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's in the case of, you know, a couple opportunities inside the 22 that they didn't cash in on. That's, you know, in the case of Shane O'Leary missing a pair of penalties, which, you know, also was like at the time is just like, oh, shucks, we missed a couple penalties. But then, you know, the score line at the end of the game is a 2-point loss, right? Yeah. Which also falls into the conversation that, me and James had when you were away, which was like the Arrows could have won a lot of the games that they lost, right? Mm-hmm. They were in positions to win a lot of the games that they lost. And, you know, this game, like, they're better. I think ultimately they're better, like, than 1-13-2. But they probably are better. I'm not saying they, like, but, you know, at the end of the day, they couldn't execute and they're 1-13-2, right? Yeah. We have to take that seriously and be like, yeah, you've a terrible record. So I think you have that kind of, so that shines through the inability to, you know, finish, the inability to score, which, you know, they finished the season with 37 total tries, which is last in the league, right? So it's like that is prominent there. And then, you know, they did thing too, where, you know, a handful of players, if you go back and listen to our interviews of post-match interviews over the course of the season, a handful of players, especially since all our interviews were done at Arrow's home game. So every single one of these is after a loss. But a lot of players would be like, ah, we played really, you know, there's a lot of, we played really good for 60 minutes and then fell apart in the last 20. Or, you know, you can pick different numbers depending on the game. Some games it was good 50 and then bad 30. Some games it started as a bad 30 and then a good 50, but you lost the game in the bad 30 to start. Right. Like, there's a whole bunch of that. And again, that this happened in that game, but, you know, where it's like they had a really good first 40 and then they had a bad last 40 or last, you know, mid, like, you know, 40 to 70. And then they kind of came back in the last 10, but that 40 to 70 is where you lose the game. And the other thing that I think the team did again, like all year, this team was almost, and in this game too, it's like watching dominoes, right? Like, the, you know, like all it takes, you can have like a perfect line of dominoes and like they're not going to move until you hit or knock over one. And then once you knock over one, all of them go, right? And there's nothing you can really do to stop it. It's just, and for the Arrows is like, that's kind of what all their games sort of seem to be, is the moment a bad thing happens, the next bad thing happens, and then the next bad thing happens, and then the next bad thing happens. Like, looking at this game, the first 40 minutes of the game, right, was going pretty good, barring a couple of missed opportunities. But Nola gets that try in the, you know, in with the clock in the red at the end of the half, right? Mm-hmm. And as soon as they get that try, they come out the gate. You know, they come out the gate and, you know, score another try within like the first 5 minutes of the first half of the second half. They score another try immediately. They follow that up with another try. And they get like whatever that would have been, 26 unanswered points, or I guess not unanswered when by it was all said in a 26 points in a row is what I should be saying. But they rattle off the 26 points, and it's like, that's, you know, that's where the game is. And it's like one bad thing happens is you give up a try and then you're going to give up another, or you get a penalty and then it's followed up by another penalty, or the lineout's doing okay. The lineout was actually pretty good in this game, but like for the course of the year, it's like the lineout could be doing okay, then they'll miss one and then it's another and another, or the scrum is missed and stuff. And I think even, you know, looking back at the first half and stuff too, those penalties that O'Leary missed are kind of like, yeah, maybe you could kick to the corner and stuff. But it's also like, do you have the confidence to do that? Or would you rather take your chance with a 45 plus meter penalty from basically straight on? It's unfortunate that he missed, but, you know, it does kind of, I just think there was so much in this game that was just like, I don't know, it just kind of reminded me of, like, as you're watching this game, I think you can find all these like little details of things that maybe plague the Arrows this season. There is obviously some really good things that happen in this game too. I think with most of the games the Arrows have played, you can probably pull some positives and stuff. Nice to see Matt Fish get his MLR debut. Again, like, no matter what you, where you are in the standings, that's always cool. That's always really cool. Mitch Richardson had another unreal game, and I will continue to bang the drum and say he's the most underrated player in Major League Rugby. He was great in this game too. O'Neill, I thought, was really good as well. It was another great game from him. Jack McRogers got his first start of the year. I thought he played well. Connor Grindahl's coming along nicely. He's around the breakdown a lot, played really well. There's still like those positives and stuff. Like, you can see a few of the younger, especially the younger Canadian guys, kind of seem to be taking a bit of advantage of, the opportunity, to, kind of show that they want to be, part of the Arrows going forward, and maybe also part of Rugby Canada going forward as well. Liam Bowman, obviously, he joined the team late and, scored a big try at the, it's a loss, but it's nice to at least walk off the field with a bit of a smile on your face when the game ended. But I think that's really all I got on this game. I do have one more like positive thing to talk about in general, but I think it might be better saved for the end, like after you, because I know you want to get into the season as a whole.
Yeah.
So would you rather do my positive thing now, or should we end positive? I feel like you're going to have negative.
I think it's probably best if we end on a positive. So,
all right,
shall begin.
All right.
I think the theme that the Arrows have had for not only this season, but you can also say like a bit of last season as well, is that if they didn't have bad luck, they would have no luck at all.
Yeah.
And
sometimes you got to make your own luck too, though, right?
Yeah. But as in, you can't ever like predict injuries or however bad those injuries can be. No. So, for example, Micah Torrence-Reed's season-ending injury that meant that he had to fly back to New Zealand.
Nick Benn.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot. Cole Davis never got put on the long-term IR, but he never played again all year.
Yeah, from what I found when I spoke to him, it was like always erring on the side of caution. Like, he was getting back into
as you should be with
playing, and he was playing. He was in training with the guys. He was getting in because he had a hit, a hit as serious as Sam Malcolm did. Fortunately, Sam was able to recover and play again at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with like Corey Thomas as well, is like, if you've been seeing guys on the injury list and wondering like, when are they going to be coming back? Most of the time it's concussion related and symptoms keep cropping up. And obviously the doctor and the medical staff, know far more than you and I do. And so, I'm always going to default to them and say like, if they don't think the player should be playing, then I'm fine with that. I'd rather have these guys stick around, much longer than be forced to come back, especially in a game which doesn't mean anything, which became very apparent towards the end of the season.
The only flip side of the whole injury thing, though, too, is like other teams also have injuries.
Yeah.
Maybe not to the extent that the Arrows did. New York had a lot of injuries midway through their season as well. And they managed to make it. They managed to make the playoffs with a long injury.
Yeah. That builds onto like my second point, because, there's only so much you can like put at the feet of players. You can say, well, Shane O'Leary should have kicked for the corner instead of going for post. He should have convinced Mike Shepherd Mike Shepherd should have said that let's go for the try instead and, give the home crowd
something. Well, that was my previous point, though, is there confidence there to score on that play?
Yeah, and obviously you can say like after the game, it's like, oh, maybe you should have done this or maybe you should have tried that. But Also, as well, it's not just the players on the pitch. This is a team sport, and that also includes like the backroom staff. That includes the team that is, you know, the coaching staff as well. And I think it's time to, if we can point fingers at players and say that they made the wrong calls, then I think we can also point the fingers at coaches and say things didn't work out this season. And I wouldn't say there's not enough to say like, oh, it's this one person's fault why everything went wrong. But you can say this strategy didn't work. This didn't change when it needed to have changed. And you could say, yeah, you know, the players were injured, their hands were tied with what they were able to have. But at the same time, you know, as a coach, you're the person who has to be able to say, we are going with this because X, Y, and Z. So let's talk about the coaching staff as it is. Attack coach Rob Howley may as well have had a ghost be attack coach, because I haven't seen him at any of the Arrows games at all. And I know Pete Smith was, you know, a former attack coach before becoming head coach. Right. Francois Ratier is defense and skills.
Like, there's something there that we just don't know with Howley. Like, I mean, before like discussing it, like I don't know what that is.
Well, yeah, I think whatever. So I feel like, yeah, there's something again, there's probably in a working, there's probably going to be an autobiography come out in 5 and 10 years where beans are spilled. Francois Ratier is defense and skills coach. He's already announced that he is departing the Arrows to become the director of rugby and head coach of a women's team in France.
For him, that's a nice move.
Yeah. So, you know, give him, and you see it. I saw on Twitter Bill Rebb congratulating him.
Yeah, that's a big move.
Yeah,
that's
so, you know, good for him. Francisco Deformes, even though he's the forwards coach, it's more like he's the hiring manager as well, because the number of players who have said they've joined because of Deformes' recommendation. So, you know, all the hats we wear. So let's talk about Pete Smith's record, because I've done the record for Kingsley Jones as well when Canada didn't qualify for the World Cup. And I think it's only fair to talk about Pete Smith's record as well. So this season, as we've said, the Arrows end with 1 win, 13 losses and 2 draws. And Smith's record as head coach, which is this season and last season, has him at 9 wins, 21 losses and 2 draws, which is only a 28% win ratio. And you got it when you have that information in front of you, that statistics is like, can the Arrows justify having the same coach be head coach next year? And now this isn't an attack on Smith, because like we've had him on the podcast, he's a lovely guy, and again, there are things that are outside of his control. But you know, if you were to ask Smith, hey, this other guy, he's coaching my team, but he only has a 28% win record as head coach, would you recommend it? And, you know, we have to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've kind of touched on there is just sort of, in all honesty, it's the reality of professional sports.
Yeah.
Major League Rugby is obviously a very new league, right? And, you know, the Toronto Arrows themselves are only 5 years old. This is only their fourth full season.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. That's trying to math that out with the 2020 thing. But, yeah, it's their fourth full season. And, yeah, like the reality in a lot of pro sports is, you know, if you finish last in the league, you know, unless it's like part of like a planned rebuild, if you finish last in the league, it's like usually coaches, general managers, players, there's a lot of change that generally happens in the off season, right? Yeah. And you know, whether you're a coach or a player on the team, right? It sounds like the Arrows are going through, like, you know, what every team does, the end of the season evaluations, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the decisions are going to have to be made for next year, yeah, right? And, you know, obviously one decision is going to, I guess, you know, we're obviously going to get have you know, if someone's got to replace Francois Radier, as you mentioned, right? He's going to France. That's cool. That's a great job for him. That's a great opportunity. Yeah. So congrats to him.
And Rob Howley's Rugby Canada contract ends at the end of the World Cup.
So
it's more than likely he won't be around as well.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I think, though, in yourself there, like, you're mentioning all of these coaches and all these players and stuff. The reality is that the most important guy in the Toronto Arrows organization right now is going to be Tim Matthews.
Yeah, he's going to have to be the one who's, well,
yeah,
I say he's going to. He probably already has made these big decisions that, you know, we'll be finding out of in like a couple of months' time, because you know, everyone needs a break and stuff like that. Obviously,
I don't think they're taking a break, man. This isn't the off season. This isn't the GM.
No, I mean, as in a break from rugby, because obviously there's going to be
they're at international the Coast game. The rugby season doesn't stop, man. It's when we talked to Tim Matthews after the game, he was like, he's all going to the Coast to Coast Cup. The draft is coming up, right? Also, the academy team's playing, so you're immediately going to Coast to Coast Cup. It's going to the Collegiate Shield. You got the number two pick in the draft next year. You got to prepare for in August when we do the draft, right? So you got to prepare for that. And obviously all the end of the season evaluations from all the players and the coaching staff. But I think, like, the thing that is going to be really intriguing, right, is that a lot of this is going to be based on at least when they announced Tim Matthews was hired, what his influence was maybe before that announcement, I'm not sure of, but, like, this is going to be Tim Matthews' first proper offseason at the helm of the Toronto Arrows, right? So you have a coaching staff that was here before he was. You have a lot of players that were here before he was, right? And, you know, that's going to be the thing that, like, that's the most interesting person in the Arrows organization right now, because this is going to be his first opportunity to build the team how he wants to build the team, right? And build the coaching staff how he wants to build that coaching staff, right? And that might mean keeping the current coaching staff around. That might mean making changes, right? That might mean, you know, keeping a handful of players around. That might mean, you know, making trades or signing new players, or, you know, a different draft strategy. Because as we've talked about before, it's like, you know, the Arrows haven't necessarily, I don't want to say I think it might be too early to say they haven't drafted well, because guys take a long time to develop. And I think it's really too early to talk and grade any team's drafts.
Owen
McCann's the only draft pick that's really made any impact so far.
And a reminder, James O'Neill wasn't drafted by Toronto. He was traded to Toronto.
For Ben Lesage.
But I think as well, there's still a big gap from what is amateur rugby with like college and university level up to MLR. Even though, like, you know, we have, you know, British listeners and Irish listeners who watch like the URC and the Premiership, is like, that's a huge step up as well. But even still, going from amateur to any form of professional rugby is going to be a big step for these guys. And
So, like, the other thing too is, like, part of what we've kind of talked about at some point as part of the Arrows' struggles this year is the low number of foreign player slots, thanks to a couple of trades in the previous season. Tim Matthews gets all of those back, right? So, you know, you can bring in some new guys. Maybe you can, you know, because you don't have that little handicap, like, maybe you can, like, you know, attract some, you know, bigger foreign players as well, because, you know, you can promise them, like, you know, more game time and stuff, because you're going to have those slots to use. Right. And I think, and it's like, I think too, like, sometimes, one of like one of the things that I think we've talked about, and I'm not really sure how to feel about it, because I think I feel like a lot of times in this season too, which is why I think I'm going to be really fascinated to see what Tim Matthews does. It just because, like, you know, I think there was a lot of games this year that the Earls could have won that maybe fell apart on like lack of execution, which is obviously, you know, something that you can maybe kind of coach and stuff, but that also is something that falls on the players. Right. And it's like it's a tough one, because it's like you can't really like point. Like, I feel like so many things. I feel like overall, when you finish 1-13-2, there's so many things that went wrong. It's too many to like point fingers at any individual. It's just over the board, across the board wrong, right? So it'll be really interesting, I think, to see what Tim Matthews, and maybe to an extent as well Bill Webb, kind of, you know, view as like who they want to stay, who they want to go. I feel like changes are gonna happen, because that's the nature of pro sports. When you have a season that, you know, you finish 1-13-2, or, you know, if you play baseball or hockey or basketball, if you finish with an equivalent winning percentage, there's usually some changes and stuff, right? The exception is, you know, often when it's part of a plan, like a long-term rebuild plan, right? Yeah. So that's kind of the exception. So maybe there's something kicking around there. Changes are going to be made. Changes have to be, they have to be made, whether that's, you know, just, you know, from the people within the organization and stuff, or looking to, you know, acquire some new talent in both on and off the field. Right. So, yeah. It'll be a fascinating off season. I don't know. Tim Matthews just became like, I mean, I know Rugby Canada still exists, but Tim Matthews might be the most interesting person in Canadian rugby for the next like 5 months. I'm excited to see what he does. Cause, I mean, if you wanna, like, you get, he kind of inherited a team, so it'll be interesting to see what he wants to do when he gets to
play. There's something I want to say as well, is that the organization as a whole has been making leaps and bounds this season. You know,
this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Yeah, this is trending toward the positive thing I want.
Yeah, this is the positive we're gonna end on.
Yeah,
this. So, you know, more corporate sponsors are being brought on this year compared to previous seasons. The global outreach from having Turf as the main logo.
That's sick. There's so many kids at games now.
Yeah.
There's
so many kids, and they cheer no matter what. They don't even know the rules and they cheer, and it just makes the entire experience better. You know, I'm still waiting for theme nights to happen at York Lions Stadium. I still want certain themes to be going on, because, you know, other teams do it as well. And I look at it and go, you know what? That's pretty fun. I think the Arrow should be doing something similar as well. But, you know, like the beer garden, the movement that goes around there, you know, the fact that you have like non-dressed players in the crowd as well.
Yeah, that's cool.
You can just go up and chat to. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, they've already sent out the emails of saying, you know, if you want to renew your season membership, you can do it for 2023 prices before prices increase. And I'm like, that's great and all. But can you please increase the chances of actually winning at home this season? Because there's only so much goodwill I can have for a team that comes so close that they can only draw two games when realistically they should have won four games at home this season.
You would be here if they went 0-99 over however many years that would be.
I'll tell you what, I'm not paying 2023 prices if they go 0-99.
Oh, hey, there we go. You'd be here if they were 0-99, just like I would be here if they were 0-99.
I'll be honest. I was very, when they said, oh, you can get three VIP tickets for $120, I was like, Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
No, like that was good. They had what did they have? The merch tent had like everything at like 50% off.
Yeah, it's like apparel 50% off, and then hats and toques were 25% off.
25, yeah. I'm a big fan of the girls' hats, as has probably been pointed out on this podcast. I still need to get a jersey though. So it's like I think, yeah, to me, I'm like, I think the arrow is definitely up to like the match day experience and you know, I mean, I know they lost or drew every home game, which you know, obviously you would prefer that they win, but I think that's part of sports business, sports marketing and everything, right?
Yeah.
Is no matter, like, everybody obviously wants to win, but no matter how hard you try, you cannot guarantee that you win. But what you can do is, you know, guarantee that people are going to have a good time coming to games.
Yeah.
To me, like, where I think like the Arrows kind of really excelled, you touched on the turf thing, and I'm not, I would probably have to, like, you know, speak to somebody within the Arrows organization to find out the true impact of it. But there did feel like there was a lot of noticeably a lot more kids at Arrows games this year. I'm not sure if that's turf or just growing fan base and stuff. But, you know, one of, as I kind of said, it's, you know, every year, all the teams, no matter how many teams are in the league, the goal is to win the Shield. One team gets to do that, right? The rest of the team still have to sell tickets and grow the sport and market and sell merch and everything else that goes with running a professional sports team. And honestly, like, I know that from a competitive on the field standpoint, the Arrows are probably going to be incredibly disappointed with this season, right?
Yes.
But the way that this season ended, and I don't mean Liam Bowman's try, but I mean everything after the game, when basically hordes of kids and bigger kids, older kids, and kids of all ages, they all were like, every Arrow player came out and, you know, were just like swarmed with people asking them for like autographs or to take selfies and stuff. And every Arrows player like acknowledged or like obviously looked more than happy to do it. Genuinely, like, if you, I feel like there's a moment where it's like, if like I filmed part of it, but, and it's, you know, it's up on my Twitter and stuff, but it's like, if, like, I filmed part of it, and it's like, there was a moment after the game where you would have no idea that the Arrows just lost a game to finish the season 1-13-2. Like, genuinely, you would not know that this team just lost. Smiles across all the players' faces as they were happily, you know, taking the photos, signing the autographs. Connor Grindahl brought kids like over the fence and was like racing them up and down the field. He had to, I overheard this conversation, but he had to negotiate with the kids that the race wasn't going to be to the opposite try line. It was just going to be the 22 and back. And then he did that race with a piece of pizza in his mouth and like a can of Coke in his hand too. So that's the, you know, peak rugby, showing the kids peak rugby fitness. But genuinely, that's like a really cool moment. And then obviously, you know, it's cool to see like kids walking around with like a ball or a jersey or whatever, trying to, like, you know, get every Arrows player to sign the ball or whatever it was that they had. And, you know, the amount of people that stuck around to do that, the fact that the Arrows themselves, like, the players were probably out there for like at least half an hour doing that after the game. I mean, they went to the dressing room and like had a little talk or something, but before that, but then they, when they did come out, they were out for like what felt like half an hour or more, which is incredible. Also, from the NOLA Gold, Tom Florence stuck around and talked to a bunch of kids and stuff too. Which I thought was super cool, because obviously, you know, that's a super rugby player, and like, he does not have to do that, right? Like, he's, you know, plays for NOLA. It's, you know, the end of a disappointing season for them too,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, again, more than happy to, you know, stick around and talk to like literally like 15 or 20 kids like surrounding him. And, you know, hung, like, you know, just stayed there, talked, signed autographs, took pictures, which, you know, was brilliant to see. And that's something that the league does need to do as well, right? Is like, even if you're a visiting, if you're a visiting team player, like you know, like you're still representing the league and you're still like doing, you still have to like do the marketing and stuff. And like, you know, it was cool to see Tom Florence doing that. It was cool to see Connor Grindahl racing those kids, or Sam Malcolm and James O'Neill and Shepard, Rumball, Richardson, Bowman. Like, I mean, I could, this would be a bad podcast if I just named the entire Arrows roster because yeah, all were out there. It's much easier to point out Tom Florence because he was like the only NOLA Gold guy, but like every player was out there. And it's like, that was like in that moment. And it's like, one, I don't think any of those kids gave a damn about what the score of that game was, or what the Arrows record was, which is, I mean, how it should be, really. I hope, you know, those kids that had to race, that raced Connor Grindahl, are probably going to remember that way more than what the score of this game was, which is the really cool thing, right? Same with anybody, any of the kids that got to talk to Sam Malcolm or whoever their favorite player is, right? It's like, they're going to remember that. Yeah. And it's like, and in that moment, the only thing, it's like, even though the Arrows record is obviously not what you want it to be, disappointing season, off the field and stuff, seeing this stuff is what gets me like really excited about Major League Rugby and like the future of the sport in this country. Is just because like I mean, when I was like 5 to 14 years old or whatever, in that like impressionable like, will I be interested in rugby age or whatever, we didn't have the Toronto Arrows or any pro rugby in Canada. Rugby wasn't like on TV or anything, right? And it's like seeing like literally like 8-year-old kids like worshiping like, you know, Toronto Arrows players. Yeah. Sam Malcolm, I interviewed Sam Malcolm after, like during all of this, as this was kind of happening. And I think he hit the nail on the head where he was just, you know, talking about, you know, how, you know, the fan base and everything. And he said, I'm going to paraphrase it, the actual quote, check YouTube and luresrugby.ca. But he said something, it's like, yeah, like something along the lines of just like, yeah, hopefully one of these kids wears an Arrows jersey one day. Right. Yeah. And that's, like, that's really what, I mean, it sucks that the season, as far as competitively, didn't go the way anyone planned. But like seeing that is like, you know, off the pitch, it's like everything seems like it's working out really well. And like, that's the stuff that I love to see. I can suffer through a couple of losing seasons if it ultimately means rugby in this country grows. And it seems like even if the wins didn't come this year, the Arrows really have figured something out as far as tapping into, you know, the Toronto fan base and what that potential could be.
So, well, talking about kids potentially lacing up the boots in about, 12, 15 years' time, we have to also mention a player that has decided to hang up their boots, which is NOLA Gold's very own Eric Howard, who it was announced on the PA speakers just before the game started that this, that he would be ending his rugby career on home turf. Unfortunately, he did get injured during the game and was limped off, but you know, he ends his career with a team win and got to do it in front of on his nation, on his terms, and you know, wishing Eric all the best with whatever
Howard was the first player I ever did an interview with after a game.
Cool.
Yeah, that's my random Eric Howard fact. I have no idea if he remembers that or not, but that's my random Eric Howard fact.
I'm sure it's one of his fondest memories.
I think it is. It's probably the highlight.
Anyway, let's talk about the other games in the final round of the 2023 regular season.
Let's talk about the fight and only.
Yeah, let's talk about Dallas and Chicago. Because now this is the thing.
Fight night, let's go.
When you're two teams and you're playing a game and you've got There's no stakes on the line. You may be interested in taking up some other sports in your time, such as boxing, for whatever reason. So the Dallas and Chicago game, you know, very closely contested. I believe it was 14-all at halftime. And then just after halftime, Sam Gola decided, you know what this needs? A few cards.
Yeah.
And decided to basically become Hallmark because the cards were just being handed out left, right, and center in this game. So a brief fight, and we have a total of 5 red cards being handed out.
Yep.
And you know what? Interesting. Sam Gola didn't get a red card.
Good for him. I don't know how he avoided that.
Good for him. Bad for the TMO, but, you know.
Yeah.
And so a total of 5 red cards were handed out, plus an extra 4 yellow cards. Yeah. So Dallas ended the game with 13 players on the field. Chicago ended it with 10 nice. And still won the game. What on earth is going on?
Hey, you know what? Sometimes you just got to open up space for the boys, you know? And it's, what a wild scene. You know, you can't, much like the Toronto Arrows, where we're like, you can't criticize them for not battling to the end.
Not literally.
Yeah, I know. Great to see some passion from Chicago and Dallas in this one. It's a pretty solid fight. There's nothing like super crazy. I'm sure everyone's going to get a few game suspension for that. Probably a couple guys that didn't get red carded that maybe will see some discipline after. But yeah, this is I feel like this was one of the big talking points of the weekend. And yeah, Sam Gola kind of got it started. A couple like nice wrestling moves there, and then yeah, everybody just absolutely starts wailing on each other. You probably could have given out more cards if you really tried, but I mean, you have to actually play the game after. If it's a 15-on-15 fight, you can't red card everybody.
You don't want to find out the hard way. But
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, games can be abandoned. So let's do it. So the final score, Dallas 28, Chicago 29.
Are you then we move on the Lucas Burr jersey that got absolutely shredded during that fight?
Something tells me that won't be up for auction.
It should be up for auction. That'd be great. You can like match it to be like, this is the jersey from the fight. Be epic.
Well, I mean, I want at least 25% off because that's what's missing from the front anyway. So
actually, that might make it worth more because you can photo match it.
Yeah. Anyway, so go from an all-Western affair to an all-Eastern affair as DC were fighting to try and secure their home playoff against Rugby ATL. Who admittedly, you know, Atlanta have had a bit of a poor season, all things considered, when mm-hmm. they were in consecutive conference finals last year. DC, they were the ones with something to do, playing at home, knowing that this could very well be their last home game of 2023. But they did the job that they needed to do. So the final score being DC 36, Atlanta 28. Now we move on to New England versus Houston, a game that could possibly be the championship final on July 8th. But for now, it would be a Eastern affair. You know, New England looking to have a secure home and go undefeated. I mean, they've already been unbeaten by all the Eastern teams, so... What's another Western team to add to that scalp? Houston, on the other hand, they know that they'll be on the road again next week. So, you know, maybe a chance to rest players. But a surprise, Kainoa Lloyd appearing out of nowhere.
A shot, too. I mean,
yeah, shows up in the last game of the season, score a try, refuses to elaborate, leaves.
I mean, Houston got their ass kicked in this game, but hey, Kainoa Lloyd scored a try.
Yeah, final score, New England 47, Houston 24.
Yeah.
Then we move on to the another cross-conference game with New York versus Utah, and this is where DC needed Utah to do their job, score tries, concede few, and they half did it. New York were able to get that try bonus point, ensuring that they would finish second in the East with 8 wins this season and 8 losses. Utah would win the game, and mean they would have 10 wins and 6 losses, and they are currently 4th in the West, because sport is cruel.
It is.
So is the world.
It is cruel. I think, yeah, it is cruel. Obviously, you know, that's kind of the funny thing with this game, is Utah obviously wins. So that means New York finishes with an 8-8 record, which means New England's the only Eastern Conference team above 500. New York is at 500, not above it. So that's one team in the whole conference is above 500. Sam Windsor hit probably the nastiest 50-22 kick in the history of MLR since they've brought in the 50-22 rule, deep inside his own 22. And then Daquan Perry scored a try off the ensuing lineout. So that was an incredible play. I don't know if that should go, like, I don't know if that could qualify as try of the week, but like, really, that's the try of the week.
Well, we'll find out on the,
yeah, exactly. Just because of that kick, that kick was unreal. And also New York did, like their Pride night. You were mentioning theme nights earlier.
Yeah.
And I just want to shout out the two teams that played, before the game in what is probably the best named rugby game of all time between the Chicago Dragons and the Gotham Knights, which are two of the apps. Gotham Knights is the best rugby name I have ever heard in my life, for a rugby club. So I just want to say shout out to them. I hope they won. I have no idea what actually happened in that game. I just saw that the game happened.
Okay, and we close out the round and indeed the regular season with what could quite possibly be the Western Conference final, San Diego hosting Seattle. Now, interesting thing about this game is both teams had a Canadian flanker and a Canadian scrum half to open the game. So for San Diego, that was Michael Smith and Jason Higgins. For Seattle, it was Nakai Penny and Reed Watkins. But it seemed the home advantage is definitely being a benefit for San Diego. As we mentioned before, they're 15-1 regular season. So they were outright winners, scoring over double Seattle. Final score, San Diego 40, Seattle 19.
Smith and Higgins linked up for a pretty sweet.
That was pretty good. That was
actual try of the week. Actual try of the week, because I don't think they're going to give it to the Sam Windsor 50-22. But
yeah, again, we are recording this on Monday, the 19th of June. So by the time this goes out, it will already be announced who's on the team of the week and who's scored try of the week, who's player of the week, team of the week, so on and so forth. Yeah. But yeah, that was the 2023 MLR regular season, and we now move on to the Championship Series, which will take place this weekend. But before that, let's speak of the Coast to Coast Cup, which happened just before the Arrows game, with the Atlantic Selects hosting the BC Bears, and in the fog.
Yeah. And by if you can see it, I don't mean that it wasn't available, because it was, but you could not see it. This was a foggy one. I am told that the Atlantic Selects won 38-14 over the BC Bears. I could verify with the video, but I can't see anything.
Exactly.
That being said, jokes aside, Atlantic Selects did play really well and fully deserved the win. I haven't seen a BC team get that outplayed in a very long time. So that's certainly an interesting twist into the Coast to Coast Cup. It's interesting. Curry Hitchborn took to Twitter to kind of, give his thoughts on the game. Bit of an interesting take that he had. I shouldn't really say interesting take, but I kind of liked what he said on Twitter on his tweet. So I'm just going to read it. His tweet was, "Losing sucks. They were better and we have to respond. We trained to win and it wasn't good enough today. Our guys know that. Be mindful of the person playing the game when the coaching staff are accountable. Today is on us. When they win, it's theirs." Nick Taylor then responded to him saying it's a refreshing take, to which Curry Hitchborn added to that after, saying, "Not for everyone. My personal take on it: when a team loses, it's on the coaches. I am incredibly tired of people screeching for more/better than castigating those that put their hand up. Look to the staff first, players second. I select these teams. Those are my guys, which is kind of interesting given the conversation we just had about 20 minutes ago. Yeah, so Curry, Hitchborn. The next game BC plays is against the Heroes Academy. So that will be if you're listening to this on the first day it's available, that game is going to be tonight, which is Wednesday, June 21st. All the games for the Coastal Cup are on the Rugby Network. As I mentioned, I know Tim Matthews and a bunch of the Aero staff are headed out there. There's draft eligible players playing in this tournament. It's definitely something worth checking out. And I think, you know, once the tournament concludes next week, me and Stu will do, I feel like next week we're going to do a pretty big deep dive on the whole tournament.
Yeah, see what we can do. It depends on how much fog there is, because it's very hard. It's very hard to read plays when you literally can't see them.
You know what? It was funny watching the game and looking at all the fog, and then looking out the window to where we were at York Lions Stadium and just
glorious sunshine,
the most beautiful day. Yeah.
Yes. Say what you want about the Arrows this season, they have been playing in some great weather at home games.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, not one. It never rained the whole year.
No. Yeah,
that's nice.
All right. So, yeah, the Bears versus Academy will be on June 21st, and the Selects versus the Academy will be that Saturday, June 24th.
That's the real home field advantage, getting the full off between your two games.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now there's been a bit of Rugby Canada news. So if you are a reader of the Globe and Mail, you may have spotted an article from Paul Atfield on June 15th, which was talking about Nathan Brombis' first year as rugby CEO. And it says, for a side that hasn't played since the loss to Namibia in Amsterdam last November and hasn't competed on home soil in almost a year, getting some test matches on the board is vital to begin resuscitating a program that has seemingly been on life support for much of the past 2 years, if not longer. And Brombis goes on to say, that's the issue. As it stands today, we have no matches between now and the end of the time, which may be a bit of hyperbole, because he then follows up with, so there are some seeds of hope. Brombis said there will be some announcements on that front in the next week or so.
Yeah.
It's also showing that because Rugby Canada isn't a union that's like flowing in the cash like, say, England rugby is, you know, they have to be at the mercy of world rugby, especially in a World Cup year that they're not competing for that in that competition.
Yeah.
So he also been talking about the independent review that came out last year, talking about the organizational dysfunction. He also says, let's become a strong rugby nation. I think that the ingredients are there. It's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of people pulling together. But I like what I see in terms of the opportunity. I really believe we can do something special. And it goes on about his 12 months in charge. But yeah, you can find that article on the Globe and Mail, and we'll provide links on both the YouTube description as well as on our website.
I think my biggest question from reading this, because I think a lot of it is similar stuff to what we've been hearing through the past year. It's like reviewing everything, and then, you know, there's the pieces that are there that people will help to be able to help bring Rugby Canada back to its former glory and all of that. It's a lot of the same thing that I think we've been hearing. Are we playing Tonga or not? Like, it seems like
has it been officially announced yet?
No.
Then that's the answer.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously, and in this, it's like, oh, we don't have any games scheduled from now to the end of time. And he follows it up with, maybe there could be news. And I'm like, those are two different sentences. Like, you don't need the, we don't have any games scheduled till the end of time. You can just be like, we're going to be announcing test matches in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that. It's two, I guess, contradicting things. Is it, are we, like, it feels like every week we're like reading a story being like, and I guess it's Tonga. Like, I don't know, but it's like every week it's like, this game's going to happen. This game won't happen. Then this game might happen. Now we don't have games scheduled till the end of time, which, barring, some post-apocalyptic event happening in the next few weeks, seems like a very long time away. I don't know. It's cool.
And there's also been an article by Neil Davidson for the Canadian Press talking about Stephen Aboud and his arrival as Rugby Canada's new high performance director, talking about his experience with the Irish Rugby Football Union, as well as his work with Italy as well, and explaining that whilst it would be easy to just copy what he's done before and bring it over here, it's obviously big changes. Not to the first understanding is geographical. Multiple time zones obviously provides a completely different perspective. And when he was asked if he would bring the Italian model to Canada, he says, "I have no intention of reproducing anything I've done because the context is different. While the principles are the same, they have to be interpreted in a Canadian perspective." He calls them control, contact, and quality, basically saying if you only have two of those, then something's going to suffer. And yeah, you know, this is a guy who's you know, got a lot to do, and it is, it does mention in this article as well that Aboud's wife is currently still living and working in Ireland, but will visit Canada when she can, and the hope is she will spend more time here in the future. And also mentioned that his son is working on a career as a psychotherapist and counsellor, while his daughter just finished her studies in animation. And if you can read that article, it's on the Canadian Press with Neil Davidson, but we will provide you a link both on our YouTube description and in our website. And as well, we also had the news today that the Canada under 18 men will be heading back to Amsterdam this July to take part in the Corendon Rugby Summer Tour. So they will be facing the Netherlands on July 8th at 11 a.m. Eastern time. They'll be playing the USA on July the 12th at 8 a.m. Eastern time, and will conclude the tour with a match against Belgium on July 15th at 8:45 a.m. Eastern. So if you like waking up early in the morning, then we have some...
This is early in the morning to you?
Well, I mean, if you're on the West Coast, it's going to be very early in the morning. So
I guess so, but these times are in Eastern Standard Time, and we live in Eastern Time, so I was going to say, I'm going to be at work for like 4 hours before these games start.
Well, actually, let me just cross-reference when these dates actually are. So the 8th will be the 8th is a Saturday, the 12th is a Wednesday, and the 15th is a Saturday. I don't know about you. I'm not that much of a fan of waking up super early on Saturday morning. But, you know, whatever floats your boat, I'm not here to judge.
Again, this is not super early. This game is at 11 a.m. It's 11 a.m. still.
The 8:45 a.m. one. You know,
again, that's still
mean.
Not super early. That's
well, good for you.
Don't you watch F1? How do you watch F1?
The game starts at 9. That's a completely different thing.
They have races at like 5 a.m.
Oh, I don't watch those, crying out loud.
And also, that starts at 9. So, like, the extra 15 minutes, is that big of a deal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey. All right.
Makes all the difference.
All right.
All right. Anyway, time to move on to our predictions for the MLR Eliminator round. So, first up, we have the Western game of Seattle versus Houston. On this season so far, Seattle hold a 2-0 record. Derek, do you think they'll continue that in the Eliminator?
No.
You don't? You think Houston's going to go?
Yeah, I like Houston. I think part of... To me, it's like Seattle's obviously had an absolutely unreal season, right? And, like, you know, if not for the San Diego Legion having the greatest season in the history of MLR, right? Like, they have it, they've been chasing San Diego for that one spot, but they haven't really had to worry about, you know, anybody catching them for a little bit. Whereas I think, like, talking to Robbie Povey was like, they've been in playoff mode for like months already, knowing that playoff race is coming. I know obviously they lost to New England this past weekend, but it was a bit of a different lineup, as with what many playoff teams did this week, was kind of, you know, start younger players, start guys that haven't really played at all this year. But I think you get back Houston full powered. I think Houston kind of also likes those kind of like environments of like the smaller stadiums and stuff. They're a very physical team, and I feel like that kind of works for them a little bit too. And I don't know, you got to pick one upset. It's not really an upset, it's a playoff game.
Yeah. I don't know. This is the thing. When it comes to the Seawolves, if you start counting them out, especially in the postseason, you're going to end up embarrassed. So I will be going with Seattle. And then we have the Eastern Conference Eliminator, New York versus DC. You know, both. While I can say that Seattle and Houston maybe like let off the gas this past week, you know, like they rested some of their main players because they had to focus on, you know, New York and DC, they were still focused on, you know, can we finish, can we get the bonus point? Can we get to host our own eliminator? Obviously, that went New York's way. But, you know, they have an even result this season with New York and DC both picking up a win against their opposition. So I'm going to go with the same Seattle. I'm going to go with the home team. I'm going to go with New York.
I'm feeling New York in this one too. I think they were just kind of the better team. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm trying to kind of weigh like how good DC is versus like how bad the East was all year. Really? Especially, like DC had seven wins, makes the playoffs in the East right now, right? So, I think like, and I mean, New York only has 8 wins, so it's not like they're too much better, but I think New York kind of playing at home, and I think, you know, a handful of their top guys look to be in fine form. You know, as we kind of mentioned how well Windsor was playing, and you know, like you said, Stu, like they both these teams had something to play for, so they're a little bit more still locked and loaded. New York still was able to rest a couple guys, especially after they got that bonus point. So I think they might be a little bit, healthier, a little bit more ready to go, and have that home crowd behind them. So, and Andrew Coquin Nawadi maybe looking for a trip back to the East Final.
Yeah, so again, those games are Seattle versus Houston and New York versus DC. And for all our Canadian listeners, you can watch those games live on the Rugby Network as well as the Coast to Coast Cup games. Those will also be shown live on the Rugby Network. So if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more as well as our written pieces on our new website, therougerugby.ca. You can also find our podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We have a YouTube channel at The Rouge Rugby with episodes of the podcast as well as extra interviews in our black box segments. Make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all our videos. We're also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, all at The Rouge Rugby. Derek, where can the fine people find you on social media?
At Percept the Jet across all social media networks.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, so H4RDMAN. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Derek, thank you for joining me, and thank you all for joining us for the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.
Go Arrows!